The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues. For the next half hour, I'll be reading articles from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter initially. And the first article from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter is entitled, "For Some, Prostate Cancer, Delaying Treatment is Okay." It's probably human nature to question why your healthcare team would advise against treatment after you've been diagnosed with prostate cancer. But the active surveillance approach, monitoring the disease rather than immediately treating it with surgery or medication, has additional evidence of effectiveness in a large recent study. The study, published in JAMA, included 2,155 older men with early-stage prostate cancer. Most of the participants had a low-grade form of prostate cancer at diagnosis, meaning a biopsy showed that the cancer cells looked more like healthy cells and tended to grow and spread more slowly than more aggressive types. While a small group of men received treatment shortly after diagnosis, the rest followed an active surveillance approach. They were given regular prostate-specific antigen tests, digital rectal exams, and scheduled biopsy of prostate tissue. About 40% of the participants later underwent treatment, with most either having the prostate surgically removed, called prostatectomy, or being treated with radiation. Most of these men opted for more aggressive treatment only after tests revealed that cancer was at risk of getting more severe or of spreading. After a decade of follow-up, nearly half the participants continued active surveillance and had no signs of cancer progression. Only about 2% of the participants had cancer that spread, and less than 1% died of prostate cancer. The outcomes were similar whether treatment occurred in the years immediately after diagnosis or later in the follow-up period. These results suggest that active surveillance is a reasonable approach in low-grade, low-risk prostate cancer. Mayo Clinic experts note that this large study lends further support to the active surveillance approach, but they caution that it doesn't apply to everyone with prostate cancer. It's an option to consider only for cancers that are not high risk or high grade, are expected to grow very slowly, and are confined to the prostate. Active surveillance also may be the best option for someone who has a limited life expectancy or other serious health condition that could make cancer treatment more difficult. Work with your healthcare team to decide on an approach that best suits your health profile and your comfort level. Now we're going to go over a Mayo Clinic special report on foot health. Though they may be some of the most pedestrian of body parts, your feet are really something of a biomechanical wonder. 26 bones, 33 joints, and dozens of muscles, ligaments, and tendons in each foot function like the spokes of a wheel, rolling with every step to distribute your weight as you walk. When you run, your foot must bear forces equal to several times your body weight with each stride. Your feet may hit the ground more than 200 million times over your lifetime, carrying you more than 100,000 miles. Like many complex systems, this one sometimes breaks down, especially with age and use. Cartilage wears away, ligaments sag, and joints become rigid or disengage. This changes the shape of your feet, which become wider and longer over time. Inevitably, problems occur. An estimated 80% of Americans will have a painful foot condition at some point, including bunions, flat feet, hammer toes, and plantar fasciitis. Hereditary factors, chronic diseases, and injuries all can play a part in the development of foot problems, and so can your lifestyle. Feet take a lot of abuse. They may be wedged into shoes shaped like arrows, jacked up on high heels, stuffed into socks that don't breathe, or ignored when painful. Disregarding these warning symptoms only allow conditions to grow worse. With a better understanding of your foot problems, you can help prevent them from getting worse. Some foot problems require medical care, but you can also take steps on your own to improve or prevent some foot problems. And the first subject that is discussed is bunions. If you've developed a bulge beside the big toe over the years, it's probably a bunion. The bump may be painful and your big toe angled inward. The characteristic bunion bulge on the side of the big toe is not a growth. The bulge is actually the head of the first metatarsal bone, which has shifted out of place. This shift occurs from changes in the position or function of the muscles, tendons, and ligaments that keep the bones and joints of the foot aligned, creating a wider forefoot. As that happens, the big toe gets tethered toward the second toe and can begin to rub. The normal mechanics of the foot may become disrupted as the big toe squeezes against the smaller toes, and the head of the first metatarsal pushes against the inside of the shoe. This inflames the skin, and a thick callus can form. Daily stress from walking and standing stretches the ligaments and tendons that connect the bones of the foot. Pointed shoes, high heels, and ill-fitting footwear crowd toes together, shifting joints out of alignment. Arthritis or gout inflames the joints. All can contribute to bunions. Bunions also can be caused by the shape of your foot or the mechanics of your walk. Nearly 3 out of 4 people with bunions have them in family history. Some people are even born with bunions. About 1 out of 4 people will develop a bunion before age 65. After that, the rate rises to 1 out of every 3 people. Women are more than twice as likely to develop bunions. Bunions can disrupt your daily life. They also can lead to serious health concerns, including infection, immobility, impaired balance, and falls. Basic steps for treating a mild bunion can begin relief and slow or stop a bunion's progression. These can't reverse or reduce the bunion bulge. Steps include, first, improving your shoes. You may find that changing to wider shoes helps. Your toes will be less crowded, and the irritation on the outside of the bunion will be reduced. Running shoes can be a good choice because they're typically designed wider to accommodate the foot as it broadens during each stride. Then there are things called toe pads. Toe pads reduce rubbing between crowded toes. Other pads available at a pharmacy can reduce the irritation between the bunion and your shoe. You may need to wear a wider shoe, as adding pads to a tighter fitting shoe could make the problem worse. You should also consider shoe inserts. These alter the way your foot fits into your shoe and potentially provide relief. For some people, off-the-shelf inserts will work, while others may need custom-made orthotics. You might also want to selectively use pain medication. Topical diclofenac, which is called Voltaren, which is now available without a prescription, can relieve pain. Non-prescription oral pain relievers like Tylenol, Advil, Motrin, and Aleve can also be effective. Periodic use of these products to help with pain flares is likely safe, but talk to your healthcare team if you have concerns or are using them long term. You can apply ice to the bunion area. Doing so for about 5 to 10 minutes at the end of the day can relieve swelling and soreness. Sometimes surgery may be required if your bunion has not responded to basic treatment. Options include osteotomy. In this common procedure, the first metatarsal bone is surgically broken, realigned, and put together using pins and screws. For mild to moderate bunions, this can be done close to the big toe, a procedure called a distal osteotomy. For very prominent bunions, a proximal osteotomy is done at the base of the metatarsal. Sometimes a procedure called an arthrodesis is done, A-R-T-H-R-O-D-E-S-I-S. Your surgeon removes part of the joint with arthritis, then joins the bones together with screws, wires, or plates until they fuse. This may be done for several bunions associated with advanced arthritis in the joint, where the first metatarsal and the big toe connect. Then there's a procedure called exostectomy. A surgeon shaves off some of the bone. Forming the bunion. Because this does not correct the underlying cause, it's usually done in conjunction with another surgical procedure. Finally, there's resection arthroplasty. The damaged joint is removed, leaving the space between the bones to fill in with scar tissue over time. This procedure can affect walking, so it's not often recommended. It is sometimes an option for those who have undergone previous bunion surgery without success, or for people who are sedentary. Now, the next subject that's covered is called fungal nails. Your toenails are made of keratin, the same tough protein found in animals' hooves and horns. While their primary function is to protect your toes, toenails can become a particularly stubborn problem when infected with fungus. Also known as onychomycosis, this is the most common toenail problem. Toenails grow about 1 millimeter a month, taking up to 12 months or more to fully replace themselves. So getting rid of fungus is a year-long effort. Even when the fungus is eliminated, the nail may not return to its typical appearance. Toenail infections are typically caused by a skin fungus, like the one that causes athlete's foot. Yeast is a less common cause of these infections. These organisms can be picked up anywhere, but are especially common around pools, gyms, and public showers. When the fungi take up residence in the nail, it becomes thickened, brittle, and yellow. Infection frequently begins at the front of the big toenail, then spreads through the nail into other toenails. Aging, going barefoot, wearing shoes and socks that make your feet sweat, all can promote fungal infection. The nail's toughness makes treating a fungal infection difficult. While the drugstore shelf is filled with topical polishes and liquids, these have limited success for most people. Many people lose patience with daily applications and quit doing them before completing the necessary year of treatment. Your healthcare team may prescribe a topical or oral medication to treat fungal nail infection. Some have limited long-term success. Topical medications include Cyclopirox. This nail lacquer, similar to a polish, is applied daily. Then it is rubbed off with alcohol after 7 days. The course is repeated each week. Results might not be seen for 6 months or longer. Then there's efinaconazole, or Jublia. This is brushed onto the entire toenail surface daily for a year. Finally, there's Tovaborol. This solution is applied daily with the dropper for a year. Its low molecular weight allows it to penetrate the nail better. Oral antifungal treatments work throughout the entire body and can be more effective than topical options. However, they carry the risk of side effects, including possible harm to your liver or your heart. The Food and Drug Administration has approved two oral medications. The first is itraconazole, which is called Sporanox or Talsura. This drug is taken daily for 12 weeks. It carries a warning about a risk of developing congestive heart failure. Then there's terbinafine. This tablet is taken for 12 weeks. Terbinafine carries a warning of possible liver problems, including liver failure. Periodic blood work is often recommended while taking this drug. In severe cases, a medical professional might recommend removing the nail. If the root structures are left intact, the nail often regrows with fungal infection that must be treated with topical antifungal medication as it regrows. If the infection does not respond to treatment and is causing pain, the nail can be removed and the root can be treated to prevent nail regrowth. Then there are ingrown nails. Nails don't always grow in the direction that you want. If not properly trimmed, the nail can grow into the skin along its edges. This is most common in the big toe. Ingrown nails can be caused by shoes that crowd the toes, by cutting your nails too short, or not trimming nails straight across. When severe, an ingrown nail can become infected and affect your ability to walk. Ingrown nails can often be cared for at home. Soak the foot in warm water to soften the skin and nail. If the problem doesn't respond well to home care, your health care team might use one or more treatments. One treatment is to lift the nail. Tape, splints, or cotton can be used to lift the nail or separate it from the skin. Then there is wedge resection. This involves trimming out a wedge of the ingrown toenail. The ingrown toenail may redevelop. Finally, there's nail removal. In some situations, the nail may be partially or totally removed and allowed to grow back. For chronic or recurrent ingrown toenails, permanent partial or total nail removal may be recommended. Another condition that is commonly encountered is hammer toe. Your toes are held straight by muscles and tendons supplying a balance of tension. When that balance is disrupted, the toe begins to bend instead of lying flat. This is called hammer toe when the bend occurs in the middle toe joint. It's called mallet toe when it appears in a joint closest to the end of the toe. These changes typically affect one or more of the three middle toes. High-heeled and narrow shoes are a frequent cause of hammer toe, which is much more common among women. Hammer toe also can be related to a bunion or arthritis. It can be caused by a past injury or by other health conditions like diabetes. Or you may be predisposed to hammer toe because the structure of your foot and the length of your toes. Moving an affected toe can be uncomfortable, and friction causes calluses or blisters. Walking or even wearing shoes can be painful, and your gait may change because of pain. An examination for hammer toe includes an evaluation of your foot, while bearing weight and not bearing weight. The evaluation also may include imaging with X-ray or MRI. If the toe is still flexible, basic treatments are often successful. First of all, you should retire high-heeled shoes. Shoes with a wide toe box can reduce rubbing. Orthotic inserts and toe pads can help too. Exercises that flex your toe, like picking up a marble or a towel with your toes, are often recommended. Surgery can be considered if conservative care fails. If the toe is still flexible, the surgeon may be able to correct the problem with a tendon procedure. A rigid toe may require surgery on the bone. Procedures to correct hammer toe are among the most common foot surgeries and have high success rate. However, the condition sometimes returns. Another common problem is plantar fasciitis. Plantar fasciitis often greets you in the morning with your first steps from bed. Sharp pain radiates from the center of your heel each time your foot hits the floor and pushes off. The discomfort tends to decrease after your foot loosens up from walking. Beneath the skin, the sole of your foot has three sturdy bands of connective tissue called the plantar fascia. This tissue is made up of collagen and elastic fibers. The fibers connect to bump on the heel bone called the calcaneal tuberosity. That's where the trouble starts. Repetitive strain can cause tiny rips that result in inflammation when these hard-working tissues connect to the bone. Plantar fasciitis appears between the ages of 45 and 64 and is most common in women. You are more likely to develop the conditions if you have flat or high arches, run long distances, stand for long periods, or are overweight. 2 million people in the United States seek medical care every year for plantar fasciitis. If pressing into your heel produces pain, this suggests plantar fasciitis. Imaging is rarely needed. The good news is this common condition responds very well to treatment. Up to 90% of people can be successfully treated without surgery. While some results come quickly, it may take 6 months or longer to be completely free of pain. Steps you might consider include rest. Give your feet a break to allow healing. Choose low-impact activities like biking or swimming. Use non-prescription pain relievers like ibuprofen and naproxen. Use supportive shoes that fit properly. Consider wearing cushioned athletic shoes. Don't go barefoot. Keep a supportive pair of shoes next to your bed to cushion your first morning steps. Try shoe inserts or orthotics to support the foot and cushion the heel. Orthotics is spelled O-R-T-H-O-T-I-C-S. Plantar fasciitis sometimes responds well to splints worn at night. Night splints apply tension to the plantar fascia, keeping it stretched out as you sleep. If those steps don't provide relief, other options may be recommended, like shockwave therapy. High-energy sound waves applied to the foot promote healing. Relief is usually gradual, and multiple sessions are required. This procedure might not be covered by insurance. Then there are steroid injections. An injection of corticosteroids into the foot can reduce pain for 1 to 3 months. But the number of annual injections is limited to prevent tissue damage. Then there's dry needling. Thin needles are inserted near trigger points to stimulate muscles and improve pain. Also, there are platelet-rich plasma, or PRP, injections. Plasma is processed from your own blood and injected into the foot. which may encourage healing. Sometimes surgery is required. Surgery is successful for 75% of people who don't respond to basic treatments. Surgery typically involves a partial cut in the plantar fascia to reduce tension. This is done through a small incision under local anesthesia. Another procedure is minimally invasive tenotomy. Various technologies have been developed to break up and remove damaged tissue in the plantar fascia. One system called Tenex, T-E-N-E-X, uses a probe inserted into the foot that vibrates the injured tendon to break up and remove tissue. Another system uses a jet of water to do the work. Recovery can take 4 to 6 weeks. Well, it looks like we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.